Good. Thanks. So anyway, some of what we do in terms of music and media, the way for you to access that is through these. Disregard the bookshelf. We just shut that down. We're putting that out in some other ways. But our website, we have a Facebook page. You can follow us on Twitter. You're not going to get little things about, hey, we're in the bathroom, or this is what we're eating, you know, all that kind of stuff that people do on Twitter that just feeds narcissism. And then the Learning My Lines, that's my blog. So, and that's where I interact with matters of faith and culture. In fact, the latest post on there, it was interesting, from the conversation we were having there with up on the stage, was on the lesbian homecoming queen, king and queen. I don't know if you heard about that in San Diego. That was a deal. And actually, the response of the Christian students to this happening at Patrick Henry High School and how positive they were about it and celebrating it. And so just some things for youth workers and parents to think about there. So that said, let's just look at this a little bit. I want to give you some things just to think about to set the context. Most of you in this room, I'm guessing everyone in this room are younger than me. And so you guys have, some of you have grown up with nothing but music video and all kinds of technology and tools. So this might not be new to you, but I think it's going to paint a picture of your students and some things you need to know. All right, so let's just, I want to present to you just real quickly, just sort of the media landscape with some facts and some figures, some assumptions you can make, some needs that we have to address as people in ministry and in terms of how you can respond, and then with your parents as well. And then the bulk of our time I want to spend walking you through a little paradigm for media evaluation, looking at media through the light of God's Word, thinking about it Christianly, we would say, filtering everything through the gospel, and teaching your kids to think critically and Christianly about media in a very practical way that it has been time-tested now for about 10 years and that students seem to embrace and enjoy. So, and I'll give you that little tool to use. So just some facts very quickly, and since we have a small group, feel free to interrupt and, you know, make observations or ask questions or disagree or whatever. But one thing is it's everywhere in your kids' lives. It is pervasive. I mean, even, you know, I was noticing today, even the simple little reality of us when we walk into that room where we worshiped, we were socked by media. It wasn't just music. It was amplified music. It was lights. It was smoke. It was visual things. You know, there were things happening up on the screens that in many ways just offered background. It had nothing to do really with what we were doing in there, but it was up there. And it's just pervasive. You know, this little photo that's been doctored, obviously, of Times Square. Have any of you been to Times Square? It's an amazing place where even 15, 20, 30 years ago, you would walk through Times Square and it was absolute overload. There was just way too much to see. You know, when you think of everywhere, the whole idea of the handheld device now, where I think the average age for a kid to get a cell phone is now 11 years old. And one of the things they do the least on a cell phone is talk. All right? They're texting and they're engaging with media. And a lot of you have done that, you know, while you've been here. You know, all the things they can do with it. So it's not just go home and watch the family television. It's not just go home and go up to my room and listen to the radio. It's being tethered to media 24/7, and I carry it with me all the time. This is, you know, some of you ladies have never seen these. Those are, perhaps you have, I don't know, those are urinals. And above them, just to show you, I mean, this is like just the way it is. I mean, I've been in restrooms, and I don't know, ladies, I don't know what you get when you're in these places in terms of media. I know you get an extra room that has a couch and perfumes and things like that that men don't get. But, you know, just the access, I've washed my hands at mirrors in men's rooms where behind the glass of the mirror there's these little televisions. You fill up your car with gasoline now, and sometimes at the pumps there's little TVs running CNN or Headline News or whatever it is. So it's everywhere, and our kids are just totally wired. A few years ago, Time Magazine asked this question, are kids too wired for their own good? And the fact of the matter is, I'm going to tell you that the conclusion I've come to is absolutely yes, and it's all of us. We are too wired for our own good. Just so you know, and I'm not really going to get into this, but We got a grant at CPYU back at the beginning of the year and to study this whole issue, and we call it our Digital Kids Initiative. So for 5 months from May through September, I was immersed in nothing but reading about, studying, contemplating, talking to people, looking at the research, looking at the data, trying to pull it all together on you know, what technology is doing to kids, to their brains, to their hearts, to their souls, to their lives, to the way they use their time. What does it mean about faith? And so we worked real hard to kind of come to an understanding of that. And a lot of that stuff is going to be posted on a special page on our website for our Digital Kids Initiative. So you can track with that, and there'll be lots of downloadable handouts and things that you can pass on to parents to help parents with. But one of the things that we've known for years, and it's certainly getting to be a deeper and deeper thing, is that we would describe it this way, that for not only for our kids now, but for all of us, media is just so pervasive that it's become invasive to the point where it's increasingly difficult to be evasive or get away from it. It is difficult to get away from it. Tim Challies, have any of you heard of the name Tim Challies? He's a blogger, reformed guy who's up in Toronto, Canada. Challies is a young guy who just loves technology, and as a Christian, he got to the point where he realized that all of his technology was, he didn't think it was being really constructive. And he sat one day and asked the question, do I own my technology or does my technology own me? That's a great question. You know, think about how you spend your time. Some of you in this room are married. And one of the things that Challies struggled with was sitting on the couch with his wife in a quiet evening, and they were totally disengaged with each other, but totally engaged with either what was on the television or you know, texting and emailing and surfing the web on their handhelds or their pads. You know, so again, it's that whole thing of this stuff. He's written a book, which I will highly recommend. I don't think I have it loaded in here to show you, but it's called The Next Story. The Next Story by Tim Challies. And it's all about being a Christian in the age of technology. It is phenomenal. And knowing The Next Story by Tim Challies, Challies, knowing the kind of theology that you're being taught here and the way you're being challenged to look at all of life through the framework of a Christian world and life view, this is a book that will probably resound with you guys pretty well. And it's worth looking at. Not only is it everywhere, but our kids are listening and watching. Some of the best research that has been done, and if you want to share this with parents, you can find this stuff online. We have links to it on our website, and you'll see the citation here in a minute. Some of the best research that's been done over the last 15 years or so has been done by the Kaiser Family Foundation, and in this case, a study that was released in 2010. Actually, the research was conducted and concluded in 2009, but it's called Generation M Squared, Meeting the Lives of 8 to 18-Year-Olds. And if you look at this, this is pretty amazing. What it looks at is total, and you can find these slides on their website, kff.org. What it looks at is how much time the average 8 to 18-Year-Old is spending with media in a typical day. All right, so you know, how many of you work with middle schoolers? All right, they're older than 8 years old. This just proves to you that the fact that these kids are immersed in this stuff and have been shaped by it and are media savvy in terms of their ability to work with it, use it, and swim in it by the time they get to your middle school groups. But what they found was the average 18-year-old in America spends about 7 hours and 38 minutes a day immersed in media of some kind. Now, the fact of the matter is that because they're multitaskers, some of that 7 hours and 38 minutes is spent using two or more media platforms simultaneously. So they might be downloading music, text messaging, instant messaging friends, posting status updates to their Facebook account. Kids don't Twitter, so we won't include that. Very few of them do, actually. But watching television and doing their homework. So when we stretch this out, you say, okay, well, for a half an hour, they were using these three things, and you stretch that out and say, okay, that's not a half an hour. That's actually an hour and a half of media use. When you stretch it out for the media multitasking, you see on the left that it actually figures, if you just added up all the different platforms and the amount they use it every day, to almost 11 hours, just under half a day. All right? So the fact of the matter is, let's just think about that for a minute. And you see, you don't have a set of parents in your ministry who spend 7 hours and 38 minutes a day in meaningful conversation with each one of their 8 to 18-year-olds. Neither are any of you people in ministry who are spending 7 hours and 38 minutes a day immersed in meaningful conversation and back and forth, or you just standing in front of them pouring into them for 7 hours and 38 minutes a day. There's nobody in your ministry. So you see just how much they use and how powerful it is. If you look at what the Kaiser Family Foundation found over time, when they started this research, and they do it in 5-year increments, the first research came out in 99, then 5 years later, 04, the thing we just looked at, 2009, okay, the 10 hours, 45 minutes, you can see how, as technology has developed, how the family, as the family is broken down, as more and more media outlets have come on the scene, as interest in media has grown, so has the use. So you see a jump from 7.5 hours in 1999. They jumped an hour 5 years later to 8.5, a little over 8.5 hours. And what's interesting is the jump this last time was twice the previous jump. So what's it going to look like in 4 or 5 years when the research comes out again? Will it be a twofold jump, you know, 4 hours more? Will it be a jump even more than that? I would guess it's going to be very, very significant. Yeah. Yep.
I think it's been the change in the phones primarily.
Yeah.
From a flip phone to where you can do multiple kinds of media on the phone all at once. So it would seem to me that you could almost say it's going to increase a lot just in the past few
years. Oh, yeah. Yeah. In other words, what you're saying is, and I agree, that these statistics are low. If we were to look at the data today, if we were able to push a button and see the data for today, these statistics are low.
Even in a Time magazine article, the cover.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, that looks old already.
Well, it's interesting when I put slides together, you know, it's just interesting how quickly, you know, a slide can be obsolete just because of the platform that's there. You know, the platform you depict. And if you have people who are media savvy, which many of you are, you're going, look at that. That's an old slide. When it may have been a platform that was popular 6 to 8 months ago. I mean, you know that Best Buy right now has the buyback policy because you walk out and you know your thing's going to be obsolete, whatever you bought tomorrow. So Best Buy, that great big box retailer that sells all kinds of technology, is buying it back. I still don't have an iPad 1. And the iPad 2 came out. I had friends who had just gotten iPad 1s. We're excited about that. So, and, you know, that's a reality that you need to be aware of, too, in terms of marketing and how that plays on us. Because planned obsolescence is built into product and marketing, whether it's clothing style, or what? I'm sure you're all familiar with the clothing store, The Gap. It's lost a lot of popularity. It's been in a lot of trouble lately because there's been so many other companies that have come on the scene and gotten their share, stolen their share of the market, a share that used to be rather large. But I used to use the illustration of to look at planned obsolescence. Just walk by today, walk by the front of a Gap store in a mall. Stand there for 10 minutes, take in everything that's in the window, look at the colors, look at the layout, look at the style of the clothes. Come back in 8 weeks, stand there and do it again, and you will see nothing that looks identical to what you saw today, because every 8 weeks they would turn it over. A few years ago, I was sharing that story, and someone raised their hand and said, I work at The Gap. You're right. A few years ago, it is now 6 weeks. So they've lowered it to 6 weeks. And we are so style conscious. I don't know if you know this, but the latest research, and this probably, again, is low, indicates that in terms of a handheld or a cell phone, the average American will replace this every 18 months. When you take into account adults and kids, every 18 months they'll replace this. And usually it's not because something broke. It's an upgrade. This is no longer good enough. You know, styles have changed. This is no longer good enough. So look at this. This is really interesting, too. Just to think about this, that what they found was that the number of 8 to 18-year-olds who have a television in their bedroom is 7 out of 10. And I just want you to think about that. If a child is in their room, and there's over, the average household in America has just over 4 television sets. Over 4 television sets. So what that means is people are dividing up, going to their own room, watching alone, including our children, who at younger and younger ages are more and more vulnerable to what they're seeing, and no one is stepping in and saying that's appropriate, that's inappropriate, or let's talk about what you're seeing. So they just absorb it, they believe it, that sort of thing. This is what I was alluding to here. Another fact is that they're watching and listening thoughtlessly and without integration. Well, what does that mean? I like to say it this way, that the posture that most human beings take when they sit down and listen to their iPod, when they sit down and watch television, when they go online to surf the internet, however they're accessing movies, the posture that most of us take is a posture that I would call mindless consumption. Mindless consumption. In other words, we sit down and we say, wash over me. You know, like I am checking out right now mentally. I've been studying all week. I need some downtime. So I'm just going to sit down, you know, vegetate, and let it wash over me. So we're not engaged. We're not thinking about it. The term integration, I don't know if you're familiar with that or not as it comes to matters of faith, but what we're talking about there is we somehow disconnect the media portion of our lives, which is very significant, from any sort of thoughtful evaluation from the standpoint of a Christian world and life view. We're not integrating our faith, weaving it into, in and through all of life. Make sense? And so we're not thinking about these things. We need to be. This was an interesting little cartoon just about, I just thought this was interesting, just about how it's changed for kids. I don't know if any of you look at the cartoon Zits. I think it's hilarious. It's just about this teenage kid, Jeremy. Jeremy's mom says, you got to let her really, you know, he's looking at, what do I do with it? What do I do with it? Wayne Rice told us at lunch the other day, you heard him talk about the fact that one of the reasons why he came here, he doesn't get many invitations to speak at many places, but one of the reasons why he came here was the invitation came in a letter, a real letter signed by someone. I don't know if you realize this either. There was a statistic I just saw that the average household in America right now only gets one piece of handwritten mail just a little over every 7 days. Most of our mail is not handwritten, and it's junk trying to sell us stuff. We don't get letters anymore. We communicate this way too. Just to say something here on the influence, all right, just how this stuff influences kids. One thing you need to realize, and I'm going to talk more about this in the session this afternoon, is how culture functions. It guides our kids through life. It tells them who they're to be and what they're to believe. In effect, it's a map, all right? Provides them with a map for living. Media certainly does that. MTV, on the anniversary, their 10th anniversary, 1991, August of 1991, after they'd been on the scene for 10 years, ran this ad. This thing's 20 years old now. It's hard to believe, but ran this ad in Adweek magazine trying to sell advertising space on their network to people who had things to sell to kids. And so they asked this very arrogant question, ever hear anyone refer to the NBC generation? Now, I understand most of you in this room are too young to really have some perspective here. But what was interesting was that for those of us who were doing youth ministry in the 1980s, by the late 1980s, the whole generation of students that we were working with had been labeled, and I don't know who coined it, but they'd been labeled the MTV generation. And the reason they'd been labeled the MTV generation was because they were changing. They were changing fast. Our culture was changing. Their culture was changing fast. And probably the primary influencer in the cultural soup at that point in time in terms of pop culture was MTV. Brought music to the forefront. Kids no longer listened to it. They listened to it and watched it. It told stories. It was much more powerful. What's interesting about this is what MTV tells the marketers in this, and I don't know if you can really read it, but it says just a couple of sentences there. MTV is not a TV channel. It's a cultural force. People don't watch it. They live it. It's a map. Shapes life for them. MTV has affected the way an entire generation thinks, talks, and buys. No other network can say that. MTV is their channel. Take a look at this. On their 25th anniversary, let me show you this little video. And we'll make sure you're able to hear this here. This was one of a group of several promos that they ran that were just kind of unique and sort of out there. But give it a look, and then we'll talk about it. Just watch this.
Reka Reka, Indian name and near hominem slang term for destroyer. One, young female who's made it her life's work to leave greater Indianapolis in her dust. She's wondering if anyone has a car she can borrow to do that. Two, a shy girl whose friends refer to her as the Quiet Storm, which totally annoys her because it's not like they even really know. Three, the recipient of frequent random texts from douchebags with bad grammar who spell everything with numbers, symbols, and single letters, which she finds really, really attractive.
Okay, little promo thing, kind of weird. Those of you who are older, you know, we look at it and we're going, what the heck was that? And they had these things with these characters. If you saw at the end, grab that screen there, and that's what they highlighted. I didn't put that in. But it's a play on the whole thing. You know, I mean, what is the great, you've learned in your classes, what is the great task of adolescence? Identity formation. Figure out who I am now, and that's going to map out for me, most likely for the rest of my life, who I'm going to be, how I'm going to live, and what I'm going to believe for the rest of my life. What MTV has said here is, you know, okay, you're about the task of defining yourself as a teenager, as an adolescent, as a child, and maybe those other institutions in life, and there is research to support this, are not providing that guidance and nurture for you. Step into us. We'll help you do that. We'll help you define. So it's the whole thing. I don't know if you ever heard this. You know, you're so ugly that if you look up the word ugly in a dictionary, you'll see a picture of yourself. Okay, so define yourself. If you want to look up at what it means to define yourself and you're an adolescent, well, there it is, the MTV logo. MTV's going to do that. Well, 25 years into their existence, they're saying that. Plus, they know that kids are broken. Have any of you read Chap Clark's book, Hurt 2.0, or Hurt? Okay, what does he say is a defining characteristic of adolescence in today's world? What is the major issue they face? Abandonment. Systemic abandonment, he calls that. Great. You have to remember that. What does that mean? That means that the institutions in our culture that should be caring for them, nurturing them, taking care of them, loving them, guiding them through life, are failing. The family, the church, the school, etc. Well, you need a place to belong. When you're a kid, you need a place to belong. You need someone to guide you and nurture you. By default, if parents are not doing that, they're spending most of their time with the media. The media will come in and do that. Even if parents are doing that, Christian parents are doing that, the media has tremendous influence. We've battled this in our own home. That's part of my passion about this. And even with my kids, ages 27 down to 19, the three older ones, 27, 25, and 23, have grown up in a world of media that is far different from the world that the 19-year-old is immersed in. Totally different. And so you can see what they say here is not only are you going to get yourself defined, but you're going to find your place to belong. MTV.com, community. All right? I showed this to a bunch of older folks on Tuesday at a seminary up north. And one of the guys afterwards said, and I've been showing this for years, he said, yeah, it's not only about community, it's about mutiny. It said mutiny afterwards. And I thought, really? And I didn't go back and look. I should have corrected him, but I just kind of nodded my head and went on. It doesn't say mutiny. It says community. So media, you know what media does. It shapes their worldview very quickly. It tells them how life is, what's wrong with the world. It tells them how life ought to be. You know, how are things to get fixed? How are you to live? I like this descriptor. I'm going to show you a little video clip later today that uses this terminology. What a worldview does is give us a reason to get out of bed in the morning. And not only that, it tells us how to spend our day once we're out of bed. And certainly that's what media does for them. And not only that, it tells them, and I apologize for going fast here, but I want to get to looking at a clip. Tells them who they are and how to live in the world. Now, here's the deal, all right? Please listen to me on this. Here's the deal. If, let's say, we went back down to that room where we're meeting, and we put 300 high school and middle school students in that room, and we showed them a music video, or we showed them a film, or we showed them an episode of a television show, or we put in front of them a YouTube video, or we had them play, if they could all do it, the same violent video game. We can't make the assumption that you're going to have 300 people who come out of there with the same response and having the same effect on them. You're going to have 300 different nuanced responses. 300 different nuanced responses. And it all depends on where they're at in the developmental stage and what is or is not happening in their lives. So just to show you this visually. One, you've got to know where your kids are at developmentally. The younger they are, the more they are to the left, the more powerful media is. We're going to look at a Katy Perry video here, all right? One that's at the top of the charts right now. One that, a video that when I downloaded it this week on YouTube, this particular version of it already had over, I think, 126, 127 million views, all right? And during the course of the day, I kind of left it on there for the morning. I came back, hit refresh, 100,000 more views. Just in that time. All right? You've got children ages 2 to 11 whose parents are immersing their kids with permission and thankfulness to Katy Perry, because it's not like other music that's out there and bad, you know. Christian parents who will introduce their kids to that and not process it with them. And the younger a child is, where they're at cognitively, the more they embrace and believe what they see and they hear. They don't think abstractly. They think in concrete terms, and that's why we warn our kids, you know, when they go out, don't take candy from strangers, don't get in a car with a stranger, that sort of thing. So the younger they are, it's going to influence them in different ways. The older they are and the more questions they have, because teenagers are asking questions, depending on what questions at the forefront developmentally, the music, the video, whatever the media is, will influence them. And then also, two of the questions that I would always ask if I'm a youth worker of my students, because we live in a sinful and depraved and broken world, is what is happening in this young person's life that shouldn't be happening, what is happening that shouldn't be happening, and what is not happening in this young person's life that should be, particularly at the level of family. So we might cite things like sexual abuse. You know, 1 in 3 teenage girls by the time they reach the age of 16 will have been sexually abused. 1 in 4, perhaps low as 1 in 4 boys, sexually abused. 40% of children and teens going to bed tonight in a home where their father does not live. Millions more where dad is absent, emotionally or spiritually absent and detached. That affects kids. So depending on where they're at in their emotional state and what is or is not happening, the music, the media will have greater influence. So the more you move over here to the right in terms of the emotional scale, the emotional spectrum, it tends to be the greater the influence. And you've seen that. Your kids who are most broken tend to be drawn to the most edgy music, lyrically, visually, subculturally, and otherwise. I mean, we've seen that happen over and over. So it does map out life for them. And we're not just talking about music here. We're talking about marketing, advertising, anything that's out there. I just did a blog where I put a couple of advertisements up, some alcohol ads. You know, alcohol marketing is directed specifically at our kids. And they want to develop new drinkers. It's the same thing with tobacco. And so Budweiser, you know, I mean, this ad just doesn't sell Budweiser. What does it do? It sells a worldview, a way of looking at life, a way of living my life. And so the subculture of drinking, you know, it's what we do. It's just what we do. Or, you know, you have broken kids who are emotionally detached and wanting, friendship, so you couch it in people having fun, being close, touching. They're beautiful people. The connection is made that if I drink and I drink Budweiser, I'm going to be happy. I'm going to have friends. I'm going to be good looking. The whole bit, it's there, and this kind of thing shapes them. So we need to teach our kids how to begin to respond to this stuff as well. So it does shape. It shapes who we are. Just at the level, here's a car ad I took out of a magazine that teenage boys would read. It's one of the men's magazines. They tend to read the men's magazines when we do research on them, on teenagers in the magazines they read. The boys tend to read men's magazines. And so here's an ad from a couple of years ago for a Nissan. And you see that there's a worldview that's sold there in terms of wants and needs. If any of you are parents, if you're not a parent yet, you're going to meet this. Dad, I need. Dad, I need. Dad, I need. No, you don't need. You know, and then you're going, you don't need, you want, and then you realize you become your dad. It's frightening, absolutely frightening, but it happens. But even from a scriptural standpoint, so all this stuff, including music, we want to be able to filter everything we see and hear through. So how do we now begin to respond? And that's what I want to do with you in the last 25 minutes we have, is actually walk you through a little paradigm, give you a little tool, and teach you how to use it briefly. It's going to be something you're going to want to take and read and think through, but do that briefly. And then what we'd love to have you do is we'll actually practice it here with something that's pretty popular among your kids, something I blogged about this week that's generated a little bit of controversy in the comments section, and I'd love to have you guys respond to it. But, you know, so how do we get our kids to begin to respond to media? What's a practical response? Let me give you a couple of quotes here that are really helpful. And let's look at a couple of things from C.S. Lewis in The World of Philosophy, and then we'll go to the Scriptures. And there's so much that the Scriptures say. It's dealt with in this tool I'm going to give you, but just I'll give you one passage that's familiar that can be helpful. C.S. Lewis, in his book, The Abolition of Man, refers to Aristotle and some of the wisdom from Aristotle, and then also from Plato and some of the wisdom from Plato. Now, we wouldn't agree with everything these philosophers say, but what Lewis cites in here as he's talking about beauty and discernment and evaluation applies really well to our shortcomings as followers of Jesus in terms of not integrating thoughtful, you know, instead of mindless consumption, thoughtful, mindful Christian critique into our daily living, integrating our faith into all of life, including our media lives. Lewis says that in one of his quotes in The Abolition of Man, he says, Aristotle says that the aim of education is to make the pupil like and dislike what he ought. That, I think, is part of what discipleship is, that we teach our kids, our students, that according to the Scriptures, these are the things that are good, true, right, and honorable. These are the things that point to the way and will of the Father. These are the things that are part of, you know, living life under the reign and rule of God. These are the things that should be things that mark our kingdom living. At the same time, we want to do the opposite. These are the things that are not good, true, right, beautiful, and honorable. These are the things that are in error. These are the things that perhaps point us to doing and engaging in stuff that is sinful or immoral or wrong. These are the things that if we engage in or we adopt, bring glory and honor not to God, the creator of the universe and the sovereign God of the universe, but bring honor and glory to what the Scriptures call the world, the flesh, and the devil. Think about that and get your students to think about that. That's what discipleship is, and that's what Aristotle is saying, that we need to train young people to like and dislike what they ought. As he quotes Plato, this is really interesting. This is what Plato says. Very similar. That the well-nurtured youth, and we're talking about kids who are mature, more specifically in our case, spiritually mature, that's someone who would see most clearly, be able to discern whatever was amiss in ill-made works of man or ill-grown works of nature. We're getting ill-grown works of nature. We're talking about the effects of the fall, of sinfulness, of brokenness in the world. And with a just distaste, would blame and hate the ugly, being repulsed by it, I guess, even from his earliest years. So we want to train them from a very young age and give delighted praise to beauty, receiving it into his soul and being nourished by it so that he becomes a man of gentle heart. All this before he is of the age to reason. We know that the age of reason is it's the adolescent years. That's where they start to be able to think. If you study adolescent development, to think more abstractly, and they have the ability to reason. Incomplete, yes, some of you're not there yet, according to what the researchers say us in terms of the human brain being fully wired, probably by about the age of 24 or 25 years old. The last part coming together and getting all the synapses wired, being the frontal cortex, the frontal lobe, which is the part of the brain that controls decision-making and impulse control. So, you know, and if you work with middle school kids, you know that there might not even be a frontal lobe yet. It's probably just an empty box in there, you know, when you talk about impulse control and that sort of thing. So all this before he's the age to reason, so that when reason at length comes to him, then bred as he has been, he will hold out his hands and welcome and recognize her beauty, because of the affinity he bears to meet her. You're recognizing some of this in him, huh? His behavior, that's what you're seeing. So what we want to do is we want to teach them to begin to integrate their faith into their media lives by processing media Christianly. Now, people have asked us, okay, and look, you guys in youth ministry, if you haven't faced this already, you will. There's all sorts of approaches to matters of faith and culture in the church, all sorts of approaches across the spectrum. And you have a lot of parents. Some of you may get frustrated by parents who homeschool their kids to protect them from all this. They don't want their kids exposed to this. Never in their lives will they be exposed to this. That's an impossibility. And there's been some interesting stuff written from people within the homeschooling community that I was just discovered and was turned on to here in the last couple of days that I'm going to process and blog about soon. That recognizes that reality. A lot of us have been speaking against that for a while. And there's some who just don't care what their kids listen to and watch, because after all, they're teenagers. We had our music. You know, our parents let us listen to, watch whatever we wanted to listen to and watch. There were very few parameters. And hey, we grew up. We became adults. We turned out okay. That's the other justification that people give. Well, you know, there has to be something better than either of those options, you know. And here's the deal. Didn't Jesus pray the night before he went to his death in John 17 that we would be in but not of the world? That has a lot to say about how we engage with and use media and discern the messages that are there. So I tell people that based on what we see in the scriptures and a good theology of faith and culture and a deep understanding of adolescent development and how kids grow and learn to think through the adolescent years, that here's the principle that we've used in our house. And we didn't adopt it early on, but we kind of learned it as our kids got older. And I'm going to tell you, the jury's still out on this. You know, they're still struggling with some of these things, and a lot of it's generational, some of it's cognitive, some of it's spiritual. Certainly my younger son, we've worked the most with him on this, but he's actually struggling a little bit with this right now. But we hold out hope that the investment we're putting into his life in this and being thoughtful Christianly about this is going to pay great dividends down the road. But what we've done is we've just kind of held to this, you know, when they're young, we think for them, okay? So those of you, when you have babies, as your kids get older, you send them off to school, you're going to set parameters. You're going to set rules. You're going to say, no, 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 we don't do that. And chances are they might push back a little bit, but they're going to go along with what you say. Your mom and dad, they worship you, they love you. You know, that's going to be okay. Now, as they get older and they start to think for themselves, they're going to want to think for themselves totally. Please don't interfere in my decision-making process is the stance they take towards their parents and at some level towards you as youth workers. You have a little more currency perhaps than we do as parents. You have a little more currency as people and youth workers to kind of think with them on this stuff and have them buy into it a little bit. And that's one way, by the way, in answer to some of the questions or the question Troy asked up on the stage today about how can a youth worker help families and parents. You can help us with this. But as they grow older, what we want to do is we want to think with them so that when we release them into adulthood, ready for life as followers of Jesus Christ, in an ideal, perfect world, what are they going to be able to do? They're going to be able to think Christianly for themselves. Here's the deal. I was never taught. I was thought for. If I was 15 years old, 16 years old, and my parents heard something, they didn't want me to listen, they said, shut it off. Why? Because I said so. All right? I listened to it anyway. I went into my adult years, nobody ever challenged or equipped me to think Christianly about these things. It wasn't until I got older that I realized this was necessary as part of my constitutional makeup as a follower of Jesus to integrate my faith into this area of my life. And so what we want to do is, during the teenage years, we have a golden opportunity, because of where they're at cognitively, to come, Deuteronomy 6, Jim talked about this last night, walk alongside them, while we're walking, talking, driving, sitting, playing games, listening to music, talk to them about what they're seeing and hearing. Are they going to buy into it? As you talk to them about what you see that's right in the music and talk to them about what you see that may be wrong, are they going to buy into it? Perhaps not now. But the basic rule is sound travels slowly. What a young person is, you know, what they hear, what you say when they're 15, they don't hear until maybe they're 24, 25 years old. And some of you are young enough to realize that that's kind of the way it's working out with your parents. So what we want to do is look at, and I'm going to pass these around and give you an opportunity to do this little tool that very quickly I'm going to show you how to use this. If you just want to take one and pass it around. And if you want more of these, I thought they would have them here in the store. We sell them for like $1, $1.50. I don't know, something like that. I think a 10-pack is $15. You can get these on our website. But you can take this. But this is a little tool we put together to help you with that. By the way, if you go to our website, and I thought they'd have this here as well. We actually, I don't know if any of you have seen this. That's actually a boxed DVD curriculum that you can use over the course of 3 weeks to teach your kids how to do this. And it has a lot of downloads and things in there. The other thing is, and by the way, you don't just do this once. Once you teach them how to do this, I recommend to youth workers once a month, maybe even a retreat once a year, have kids just bring their music. Bring your stuff. We're going to listen to it together. We're going to evaluate it together, because what this does is it allows you to not only teach them how to think critically and Christianly about their music, but it allows you to do Bible study and teach them the scriptures at the level of what they're seeing in the world around them. By the way, there is a downloadable leader's guide on our website. You'll find it on there, and you can download it and use that to help teach you as well. So rather than read through this, I'm just going to tell you very quickly, what this thing teaches is three core issues and three core steps. I'm going to do this very quickly. We're going to watch a video, and I'm going to have you kind of in a group just come up with a couple of things very quickly. The three core issues that we think we need to deal with before we start to teach kids how to evaluate music and media are these. One is authority and challenging them to think about using the standard of God's word as the measuring stick, all right? So there's a few pages in there where this is addressed. You can read through it. And get them to see as well that most of us make our decisions based on the authority of personal opinion, based on the authority of what the marketing world's going to throw at us, what the music industry wants to throw at us, what's good, what's bad, what we should listen to, what we like, what we don't like. So we have that. The second core issue is the issue of worldview, which I've mentioned already. I know you've studied worldviews here. What we want to do is teach kids what a worldview is. So there's a simple definition of worldview in there, along with the basic worldview questions. But we want them to understand that every media piece that's thrown at them, every media piece they encounter, whether it's a 15-second advertisement, a print ad, a television show, a film, a song, a music video, a video game, everything promotes a worldview at some level, and everything you see and hear shapes your worldview at some level. And so we need to be conscious about the concept of worldview, the worldviews that are being promoted, and the worldview that we're shaping in our own lives. And then lastly, which I already mentioned, the third core issue is media use habits. We want to move them from a posture of passive, mindless consumption to more aggressive and purposeful, mindful critique. And this is what this teaches them to do. And what we do is we simply do this. We show a piece, all right? Have them bring their music, you show a piece, and then you walk them through the three 3D steps, which are these. The first is this, discovery. This is the process, it says here, of thoughtfully and carefully listening, watching to hear, and seeing the underlying worldview of the media piece. In other words, you're digging deep to discover the message communicated in the media. This is the objective phase, all right? This is where you stop it and you say, what did that just say? And what we've given you there, and it's on several pages, are numerous questions from page 4, 5, and 6. Numerous questions that you can ask. Things like, is it hopeful, is it hopeless? What character traits are portrayed as positive? What are negative? What does it say about the nature of sexuality? What does it say about the nature of love? What are suggestions are offered for resolving conflict? Is there a hero? Is there a villain? What do they stand for? What's seen as virtue? What's seen as vice? Not every question will apply. And by the way, as you start to do this, and I'm going to tell you right now, will my students do this? Yes. They will be engaged with this. I've seen it happen over and over and over and over again. And I have people constantly, we've got probably 70, 80, 100,000 of these out there that students have been trained in, and I've never heard a negative comment come back. People come back and say, our kids say this is like an amazing thing. They've never thought about this stuff before. They will do this, all right? And they're bright enough to do it. So you discover. Then you move from the objective stage. The second step is the discernment stage. This is the practice of looking more closely at what you discovered and distinguishing those things that God says are good, true, healthy, and right from those things God says are evil, false, dangerous, and wrong from the perspective of faith. And so we would go back to something like Romans 12, 1 and 2, where Paul says, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. What you're doing here is you're stacking the media piece up against this basic principle here and everything that's contained in the scriptures to see what's good, true, honorable, and right. You're getting them to make a judgment call based on the standard, the authority of scripture. And they need to see all of life through this, especially their media world. And then lastly, you move to the point of discernment, and this is where you decide if the media has entertainment value. And you talk about this. Is this something I should listen to or watch? Will I listen and watch? Should I support this artist? Will I support this artist? And you move them from belief to behavior with that question. But secondly, we don't want to just be simplistic here. We realize that there is a certain way of looking at media that's missional and not entertainment value, where they can get to know their friends and their peers better as they want to share their faith, as they grow in their faith, as they want to share their faith with these people, finding out what they listen to, what they watch, and using that as a mirror back to them who they are. This is what Paul did in Athens, right? This is what missionaries do when they walk through a pagan culture and they take note of everything. They don't believe it. They don't adopt it. They allow it to inform them in terms of how they're going to shape the gospel message. And we want to get kids to that same point. I think it would be great if we get kids to this more deep level. And so you can check that out. Now, what I want to do is I'm going to show you a brief media piece, and I want you to look at it, watch it, and then we'll run it for about probably 5 minutes. And the last 5 minutes that we're together, what I want you to do is, like in groups of three or four, I want you to just come up with a couple of things. One would be, what is one message, one worldview message that you've discovered? Just come up with one worldview message that you discover in this piece. And then secondly, what biblical truth could we direct our kids to address this? And I'm not looking for chapter and verse. I mean, you might come up with that, but more generally, what are the issues you want to see how the scriptures speak to? And this is going to take you deeper into the scriptures as well, because this generates some amazing conversations. And like I said, you can go onto my blog and see, I posted this video earlier this week, or late last week, I guess it was, and there's been some spirited conversation about it. But give it a look. Whether you like it or not, this thing is huge. So we'll just look at it real quick.
Beth Terry, what happened to your room?
Okay, I'll stop it there. That's another video. I'll just stop it there because it goes on. But just from that, just in groups of three or four, one issue, and how would you have to address that from the scriptures? And the key here, by the way, is to open you up to see what issues you need to address that you might not already be addressing, that swimming in this stuff is addressing and shaping for them and shaping their worldview. So real quick, groups of three or four, just come up with something in the last couple of minutes, you know, what's one issue, and then a biblical response. Or maybe you could just, you know, amongst yourselves, everyone list one issue, and then I'll close this. Okay. I give you one of these. This is my take on it. Go ahead. You guys can just ignore me. Ignore me. Ignore me. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Thanks for telling me that. This could get crazy. Okay, I know I'm watching the clock, and I want to be faithful to the to you guys in your time. But do you see how this works? And what I've given you is this was my initial, this little 3D thing. This was my initial attempt to do. We do a lot of these 3D reviews. You can actually download these, okay? And this is the kind of thing you can use with your students. You can use this to inform your discussion. You can also, these are free, and you can print these out and give them to parents. They're done in color. I just did black and white because our color printer broke down over this week. But and then on the back, we make it easy for those of you with smartphones. You can scan there and find the video online. And also, if you want more 3D guides, we take you to that. But again, just do this, all right? And I encourage you to do it every month. Find a month to do this. There's one Christian school that I know of that when they were turned on to this, they started a period zero. And every Wednesday they have a period zero, which is before school starts, before period one. And there are students that come every week and bring music and go through this. And they are committed to it. They want to learn how to do this. The beauty of this is as you do it, it will become second nature. Second nature. So hopefully I've introduced it well enough. Just give you a little tool here and convince you the need to do this. If you have any questions, grab me later, okay? And we can talk about this. But I know it's lunchtime now, and I have to go get my stuff out of the hotel room. But let me just pray for you. Before it winds up like it's some auction house somewhere. All right, let me pray for you real quick, and then we can go down to lunch. Father, thank you so much for these folks here and for their commitment to you, for those who are students. I just ask your blessing on their education, that they would continue to have tremendous desire to serve you and to follow you. Be with them for the rest of the day, Lord, that this would be a weekend of tremendous growth and challenge, and that great fruit for your kingdom would come out of this as we go home or back to the students that we work with. We pray for them, too, that your Spirit would be preparing them to receive anything that we want to deliver to them, and for the parents as well. What difficult times these are to be guiding kids through life. Thank you, Lord, for this time here at the school. And it's in Christ's name that we pray. Amen.